Hello and welcome to the Not Alone Podcast. I'm Samuel Fredrickson.
And I'm Jason Moitoso.
And today we're back with one last cryptid.
What?
We've had a
That's it?
Yeah, I'm going to kill them all after this. I'm going hunting.
Well, that means we don't have to talk about them after that. They're just all myths and legends.
I'm going hunting.
At that point.
They already are.
Season?
Maybe they're not, though. Maybe they're real.
Jackalope.
No. We've had a good cryptid run now. We did.
We have talked about quite a few, haven't we?
We're doing what we're doing today. We did cave monsters. We did the Flatwoods monster. What did we do before that? Mothman. Yeah, we've had like a cryptid month over here.
That's beautiful.
It's because it's the month of love, because it's February, and we love cryptids.
Yes, 100%.
Yeah. So we're gonna round out our cryptid discussion with one last beautiful beast.
Zapdos.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. I'm glad you said it because I didn't even think to put it in the notes. That's right.
You fool.
We're talking about Thunderbirds. Thunderbird. I don't know why I did that.
Please just name the episode Zapdos.
I think so.
Perfect.
I think so. I don't even think, typically, as our friends and listeners will know, typically we do the episode number. We do, so like episode 117, then we do a colon, then we do the subject of the episode, and then we do a dash, and we do a subtitle. Not this week. This week, I'm literally just going to type Zapdos.
Boom.
Why not?
Stoked.
Everything's all right. Going downhill anyway.
Excuse me?
We're all going to die. Happy Ash Wednesday and Lent, everybody. Remember, you are dust, and to dust you will return. Just like the Thunderbirds.
Should we carry on?
Long before J.K. Rowling started ruining Harry Potter every
Phoenix,
way that she could. No, I know. I wrote that, and then I was like, people aren't going to get this. But it was, I'm referencing the Fantastic Beasts.
Oh,
movie.
And Where to Find Them?
Yeah, because he's got a Thunderbird, and he's trying to take it to the American Southwest. That's why he's
cool.
Here. Yeah. Did you watch that movie?
No, clearly I had not.
Well, you
pretty obvious there.
You could have. It's a pretty forgettable film.
Oh,
it was all right.
Perfect.
I didn't watch the second one.
So I'm glad I didn't.
It's fine.
Which is weird because it sounds like it'd be right up my alley.
Yeah, it
like
does.
The rounding out of mystical creatures in this world.
Long before her home country had its clock cleaned by ours, and long before we even showed up on the scene to commit unspeakable acts of horror, Thunderbirds roam the skies above North America.
They did.
Do you have a problem with that, Jason?
Nope.
I'll tell you what, I wrote it into the notes for all of your problems to be addressed here in approximately 15 to 20 minutes.
Perfect.
Now, the legend of the Thunderbird is one that crosses tribal boundaries.
Yes.
Encompassing what we call the United States. From east to west, from sea to shining sea. The Thunderbird itself is called many things by many different tribes, and its character likewise differs. But one thing that everyone can agree upon is a big old bird. It's like Big Bird big.
That one's not going to fit in your oven.
You're going to need a bigger oven for that.
Thanksgiving's going to be weird. Yeah. Spick it over a fireplace? Is that where we're at on this
one? You told me you spatchcocked a turkey.
I did.
Maybe you could do it to a Thunderbird.
I'm
going to
need a chainsaw probably.
No, you couldn't because it would kill you.
It would electrocute me, I'm assuming.
You absolutely cannot. Well, kind of. So that's the thing, right?
So there is not a charge in its feathers?
So that's the thing,
right? Okay. Gotcha. That's when I need to shut up.
That's the cue, right? So that's the thing, is that's one thing that's not necessarily agreed upon.
Okay.
In some tribes...
Differs from region to region?
Yes. In some tribes, Thunderbird is quite literally a normal bird that's just... freaking huge. Big old bird. In other areas, Thunderbird is a spiritual being that creates, or at least is somehow associated with, thunder and also lightning.
So it's more of a origin story. It's a mythos explaining the world that we live in.
Yeah, I would say so.
Okay.
Yeah. Most
it has a higher calling.
Exactly. But again,
higher calling?
But again, everybody agrees it's huge, so big that it can hold a killer whale in its talons.
That's bigger than I expect.
Yeah. Bigger than he expects, to say the very least.
But that makes sense, and I'll get to that eventually.
All right. Now, most legends state that the Thunderbird disappeared very shortly before the arrival of the Europeans. Like I mentioned, sometimes a Thunderbird is a natural animal, just very large. Other times it's supernatural, but an animal all the same. Now, according to the Shawnee tribe, previously inhabiting the Ohio Valley, the Thunderbird is one of three spirits who controlled the weather. The first was Cyclone Person, who caused tornadoes. The second were the Four Winds.
Sounds like a bad superhero.
Cyclone Person.
Yeah.
Don't be disrespectful.
I'm just saying, like,
I'll murder
in,
you.
In the world that we live in, where superheroes are all over the place and geek pop culture
reign
yada yada.
Supreme, yeah.
Yeah. Cyclone Person. It sounds like an off-brand superhero.
I love it.
I do too, but it just sounds... I love it. It's great. Keep going. We got Cyclone Person.
The Four Winds.
The Four Winds.
Yep. And the Thunderbird.
And Thunderbird. Mr. T.
No. No.
Thunder.
No. Thunder. Now, that's what's interesting. Okay?
So wait,
when
wait,
you're...
Hold on.
No, no, no. Stop. That's what's interesting. You just said thunder.
Yes.
I've said it multiple times, but I've always said it with the word bird after it. Interestingly enough, when you read some of these legends, it's not always specified Thunderbird. They'll just call it thunder. It is thunder.
Okay. Yeah,
it is
there's that kind of that, like
the encapsulation of it. Yeah.
Spiritual anyway, embodiment of this
of
element.
The thing. Yeah. Anyway, what were you going to say?
So all those are all wind related.
Yes.
Phenomena.
Yes.
Or at least sky related phenomena.
Yes.
Cyclones, winds in general, of course, and thunder, I'm assuming including storms.
Yes.
It's all rolled up into this element
three...
of
three.
So is this, I'm sorry, you said, where is
this
tribe
is the
from?
Shawnee people of the Ohio, previously inhabiting the Ohio Valley.
Okay, so Midwest, probably somewhat?
Please don't ask me about geography. I don't know where Ohio is.
What I'm getting at is that, like, I'm assuming big plains where the
yes,
sun and the
plains,
sky
yes.
and the wind is very
important.
Substantial. Yeah.
Yeah. Yes.
To their culture.
And the plains are one area that the Thunderbird is most prominent in.
Okay.
Yes. Now, according to the Shawnee, the Thunderbird creates thunder by flapping its wings and lightning by the simple act of blinking. The Thunderbirds guard the entrances to the next world.
I wonder if that's because blinking and lightning is so fast.
Yeah, probably. Honestly, probably. It's over. Then it happens again.
Yeah, that's okay.
Yeah,
I'm digging the thunder.
Okay, good.
And the lightning.
I'm glad. Now the Shawnee legend claims that these storms. Again, you're right. This is a stormy area. Big storms. Claims that the storms themselves are a result of Thunderbird fighting with another creature, which is the Great Horned Serpent. Now, the Great Horned Serpent is found in a huge amount of Native people's mythologies. It's also found in places as far as, or in places like Europe and the Far East. Now, the motif is that the Thunderbird and the Horned Serpent fight. They fight because the Thunderbird, kind of as I mentioned, represents the next realm or the higher realm, and the Horned Serpent represents this realm here. Now, one notable legend comes from a tribe called the Potawatomi. According to the Potawatomi, there is a mountain in the western part of what we would call Marionette County, Wisconsin. On this mountain was created the Thunderbird, which was created specifically to defend mankind from giant snakes. On the peak of this mountain, which they call Thunder Mountain,
did pretty good.
It did do a good job. We're here. And the snakes...
are not.
They are.
But they're not that big. They're not giant.
But they are. And they look like us, but reptilian.
No.
This is not the original legend. That's just me iking it up in here. We got an Ike deficiency. We gotta get some Ike up in here, the lizard people. They're here.
I'd rather have Mike.
Get Mike in here. Mike Bloomberg! All right.
Oh, that's gonna be something we're gonna have to cut.
No, it's not. I'm the one who cuts things. I decide. Anyway, so this mountain, Thunder Mountain, that's where the Thunderbird lives. Now, the Thunderbird sits on a nest that contains two eggs, which, when hatched, are quickly replaced, and upon which the Thunderbird sits day and night, incubating her young. Potawatomi would offer tobacco to the Thunderbird to declare their friendship, and also request safety. What? It's a sacred herb.
No, it is. That's exactly what
I'm going to stab you in the eye. One day, some members of the tribe were exploring around the area. Do you have something you'd like to say? You look like you have something you'd like to say.
Good.
All right. Exploring around the area. When they found a pond which was inhabited by the horned serpent, which lived under the mountain, they were terrified and fled. Shortly after this, one of the hatchlings found the serpent, sunning itself on a rock, swooped down, and snatched him up. The two were caught in what seemed to be an eternal struggle until a hunter came by. The hunter was asked by both of the combatants to shoot the other one, and the man could not choose. So instead, he closed his eyes and shot an arrow in that general direction, which struck the Thunderbird. Now, it survived, but it was captured by the horned serpent. Thunder Mountain, it is a real place in Wisconsin. You can actually go and hike it. According to some, there are strange acoustic properties to this area which cause very large echoes. Others claim it to be a genuinely spiritual place, a place where the divide between this world and the spirit world is substantially thin. Very thin. The native name for this place is Chekwa Bekwaki. So, you can find it either Thunder Mountain or Googling that. But there were more stories of the Thunderbird. Another one comes from a tribe that we spent a little bit of time with a few months ago, the Ojibwe, also known as the Chippewa. As you might remember. Do you remember?
Sure.
We talked about them substantially when we were talking about the witchy wolves of the Omer Plains.
Okay. Yep.
It happened to me too. I literally read it and
that
I was like,
"That name sounds familiar.
Where's this from?
Where's this one?"
And then I just opened the notes app and I searched and I found it. Makes sense. Perfect. Now, according to the Chippewa, the Thunderbirds were created as a direct response to the underwater Manitou. The Manitou is just a term for a spiritual being.
Okay, gotcha.
The underwater Manitou was a very powerful spirit, a composite composed of two parts. One is the underwater panther, and the second is our good friend and mortal enemy,
the great Crowley.
Not yet. Soon he will be. The great horned serpent again.
Ah.
Yes. And again, it's worth noting, these tribes, they're all separated. They're not the same, and yet these legends are very similar. And of course, we know how legends get dispersed, mm-hmm. especially in cultures where the survival of cultures depended on trading between different groups.
Right.
They go as they go.
You also trade stories.
Yeah. Now, the underwater Manitou controlled all the game and would withhold it from those that they disliked and that angered it. It would use its control of the water to drown the Chippewa, especially their children. Yeah. And this could not be allowed to stand unopposed. So the trickster and culture hero archetype of the Chippewa, individual called Nana Bozho, he created the Thunderbirds, which were huge hawks with control of thunder and lightning. And it would utilize these tools to do battle with the underwater Manitou. In order to help the Chippewa, However, it also acted as an agent of moral justice, punishing those who acted immorally or broke the traditions of their people. So, again, similar motif. We have the Thunderbird being created to help, and yet something happening to where it not only helps, but also hurts. Just like the underwater Manitou controlled the game on Earth and in the sea, the Thunderbird controlled the fowl of the air and was honored and revered for both its raw power and its ability to provide for humankind. According to one Chippewa, quote, "We were taught to show respect for the thunder, capital T, thunder. We were told to sit down and to be quiet until the storm had passed. It was just like God going by," unquote. So, that's another story. Anything about these stories jumping out to you so far?
I think one of the biggest things is that there are other legends of eagles fighting snakes. I think one of the more common and well-known ones is the one with the Aztecs deciding where to settle and make their capital location was the site where they would find an eagle eating a snake on top of a cactus.
Oh, yeah.
And that's also, of course, sounds familiar because that is on the Mexican flag today. And also, instead of butchering the Aztec word, I'm just going to say where Mexico City now stands is where that eagle was seen. So the idea of an eagle eating a snake or fighting snakes in general, that is something that's almost commonplace. And a site that isn't obscure in any such way. So it makes sense to have this kind of battle between something that is high in the sky versus something that's on the ground, and that kind of duality between spiritually good and evil.
Yeah.
Snakes are usually never seen as a good omen or something that is a good, positive creature. The second thing that I've noticed that is very similar as well is that what you've been describing to me, these fights and battles with other creatures, also again reminds me of like an eagle hunting pattern, because we do know that eagles swoop down and grab fish for sure. So you've got, again, an eagle fighting something like a snake and an eagle fighting something in the water. Both of these seem very, very similar to what eagles currently do. And I think that might be some of the inspiration for these stories to that degree. Now, the size, I've got something else for later.
We'll talk about that in just a moment for sure. But
Big Bird.
Big Bird. You hit the nail on the head. Duality. These all represent a dualistic framework. And the Thunderbird is a balancing force. Typically, again, as we've seen in most of these stories, the Thunderbird is not the first thing. It's the second thing. It's the balancing agent created to come up against that which is causing us to not be able to flourish.
And when you think about it, so is like, you know, the coming storm.
Yes.
In a lot of ways. Sure, it's destructive and sounds powerful, but it brings water to
life,
potentially a dry area. Mm-hmm. So it balances out things. It restores things to nature, essentially. That makes sense?
Yes, totally. Cool. And another aspect of this is seen when the Thunderbird is seen, not necessarily in conflict, but as opposing the Great White Owl. The Great White Owl represents, I believe Mothman? It's still in... I'm going to kill you.
I know.
I believe it's still in Chippewa culture and tradition. The Great White Owl represents winter, and the Thunderbird represents summer.
Yeah.
So they're kind of chasing each other throughout the year.
I mean, we have a
year.
Lot of thunderstorms here during the summer, which kind of makes sense.
Yeah.
That same duality.
Yes, I agree. There is one last story I want to tell from the tribes of this nation. This one comes... It comes from a lot of actually tribes from the Pacific Northwest, the Culete and the Tillamook tribes especially. The story goes that there was a monstrous wicked whale which was devouring other whales and thus harming humans indirectly by taking their food and economic resources, as well as directly harming them too. Now, the Thunderbird saw the whole thing happening from the peak of Mount Olympus. This is not obviously Greece, but rather the highest peak of the Olympic mountain range in Washington, which is called Sunado by the native people.
You really threw me off there for a moment.
I know I did.
I threw myself off when I was researching this. We're going to Greece?
Yeah. No, we are on the West Coast, Pacific Northwest, Washington area, right up there. So, Thunderbird soared over the ocean and descended to fight with the whale. The struggle created tidal waves which flooded the surrounding area and threw canoes into trees. The battle ended with Thunderbird. Yes. Thunderbird prevailed. He tore the body of whale to pieces and scattered them around the area to create the mountain peaks. Now, this one is really interesting. Thunderbird versus whale is a extremely niche specific story.
Yeah.
That is found, like I said, all throughout the Pacific Northwest, up and down. And what's very interesting is that by utilizing a kind of chronography, right? Study of time. Is that?
Yeah. That sounds right.
By utilizing that, by asking and talking to the people telling the stories and being told, I was told by my grandfather that this happened 6 generations ago. I was told it was 4 generations, this sort of thing.
Yeah.
By coalescing these all together, it was actually found by cultural anthropologists and natural scientists that this is most likely referring to a 9.2 earthquake, 9.2 magnitude earthquake. That occurred in the year 1700.
That's cool.
It is very cool.
That's very, very cool.
It is unreal how cool this is to me. So they did. They dated this and they said, okay, based on what they're saying.
And what we know, like geologically, what was probably occurring during this time.
This was happening between the end of the 17th century and the beginning of the 18th century. Well, what do we know geologically that happened? A giant earthquake. An earthquake that caused tidal waves. It happened, well, first off, it definitely caused tidal waves on the Pacific Northwest. It happened when the Juan de Fuca plate subducted under the North American plate.
Okay.
It caused tidal waves here, and it caused them in Japan. And we have accounts from Japan.
Of tidal waves during this time.
Of tidal waves during this time. On the day. They know the day. It was January 26th. January 26th in the year 1700.
That's cool.
Isn't that amazing?
That's so amazing.
That makes me want to go to college all over again. I love that so much.
And study geography?
Cultural anthropology, probably.
Gotcha. That makes
sense. But that would probably be what I would do if I wasn't going to do what I'm doing now. But in any case, it's important to realize that so often these things are more than just a way of explaining how things happen sometimes, but rather they are specific events recorded in memory and recorded in history. But in any case, finally, talking about legends, I know I said that was the last one. I just wanted to mention really quick,
it's worth
noting that the Thunderbird is not always good. There are multiple legends of him being evil. And it's also worth noting that the idea of a giant bird, one who can carry people and whales off in the sky effortlessly, is also found throughout the world. In the Middle East, you have the Roc, which was R-O-C, mm-hmm. which was characterized and recorded by Marco Polo. He said, quote, "It was for all the world like an eagle, but one indeed of enormous size, so big in fact that its quills were 12 paces long and thick in proportion. And it is so strong that it will seize an elephant in its talons and carry him high into the air and drop him so that he is smashed to pieces. Having so killed him, the bird swoops down on him and eats at leisure."
That's also a very frequent, like, hunting method for eagles.
Yes. So it fits.
It fits.
It tracks.
Yeah, that hunting method does. But I doubt any bird would ever be able to lift an elephant into the air. So
he doubts it. I don't. Now, the
wingspan of that thing would have to be like probably close to like 100 feet. And then it'd have to be able to generate enough lift, which is the tough part.
That's the tough part.
Yeah, because, well, I'll talk about it.
All right. Now, the Persians had Simurgh. Persia, of course, being modern-day Iran. Simurgh was large enough to carry off full-grown whales and was a metaphor, which the Sufi, or was evoked as a metaphor by Sufi mystics for God, such as in The Conference of the Birds by Sufi poet Faroud Undan Attar, written
in... As long as there's not foul language.
I'm going to murder him. This is it. Get it on camera. This was written in the 12th century, and in this story, a group of 30 birds come together and propose who would be their perfect leader. Well, their perfect leader would be the Simurgh. So, the 30 birds travel through the air, through the mountains, to find the Simurgh, to make him their leader, when they realize that they were the Simurgh all along. This only works if you know Persian, because in Persian, Simurgh literally means 30 birds.
Oh.
So, there's that little play on words there. I love it. I think that's amazing. I love that. I've not read it. I was reading some Rumi, another one of those words that I've read a million times but don't know how it's pronounced, and he referenced, or it was him or Hafiz, they referenced this, and so I looked it up a few months ago and I was like, this sounds amazing, but then I forgot about it till I was doing this episode research, so it all came back around.
Cool.
Now, the Agadah, or legends of the Jewish people, speak of the Ziz, a bird large enough to blot out the sun. Ziz is the counterpart to Leviathan and Behemoth, which constitute the kings of the birds, the fish, and the land animals, respectively. And these are but a few examples of the giant bird's motif, which riddle the mythologies of all the people of the earth. So, Jason, why? Why are we all seeing these big old birds in the sky? Or I suppose, why were they all seeing those big old birds in the sky?
Birds are cool, man.
They are cool.
I think, honestly, what the issue probably comes down to, at least European-wise and Asian and African as well, is probably...
That's most of the continents.
Yeah.
You want to do a few
everything,
more?
Okay, everything old world. How
okay,
about that?
Okay,
is that easier?
Yeah.
I'm assuming that's just attributed to, again, some sort of mythos to why birds exist. Or essentially, maybe they did see a big bird a time or two and then got the perspective wrong, proportions wrong, something like that. But in America.
In America.
In the new.
In this country.
In the new world.
That we stole. Go
that's
ahead.
Also the same age as all the old world.
Yep.
There are some birds. Some big birds.
Big old bird.
Yeah. And I talked about one of them back when we were checking in on good old Mothy Boy. One Moth Boy. We're checking out on Mothman. Was the Argentavis Magnificens or something like that. It has literally like magnificent as its last name. Which
rightfully
is,
so.
Yeah. That is the biggest physical size bird if we're putting it to, like, on a scale and weighing it. Its wingspan...
And I am.
Its wingspan potentially was anywhere between 21 and 24 feet long. And it's one of its actual quills, a feather, potentially was about 5 feet in length. With
12 paces?
About, I don't know.
That's what Marco Polo said.
Maybe. But the problem is that Argentavis has only been found in... Argentina. But the Argentavis is a part of a different family of birds known as the Great Pterotorns, which is
nice.
Dope.
What does the torn suffix mean?
No idea.
Okay, probably just bird or something. I don't know.
Essentially, it is the overarching like category of condors and vultures. More on the condors and vultures in a moment. Argentavis was basically one of them. He was a giant vulture that fed on the carrion of the megafauna of South America during its time, which was roughly around 23.
What kind of megafauna?
Okay, good question.
What does Big Boy eat?
Big boy probably ate any number of mammoths, but also we have...
Mammoths?
We also have... crap. Let's see. I think there's a South American Smilodon of some sort. Maybe not.
What's a Smilodon?
A saber-toothed cat.
Oh,
wow. That was also the same region that was home to the terror bird, the giant carnivorous bird predator. I think that was previous to it. But South America has been home to almost, like, if you remember Ice Age, about half of those guys. The giant ankylosaurus-esque Doedicurus. Man, I've played too much Ark. Doedicurus is, I believe, also native to South America, but there was big fauna in South America. Same thing in North America as well. We had mammoths again, saber-toothed cats, which are all found in the La Brea Tar Pit, which is one of the bigger regions that we have one other vulture creature. And then lastly, we also have things like giant ground sloths, which were also native to South America at that time.
They do this every year.
Thank you.
It's an Ice Age reference for you.
Ice Age 1 right there. That's what's up. Anyway, there were big things to eat and big carcasses to clean up, which is one of the reasons why these big birds, these big vultures, were able to do what they did and live to these enormous sizes. Because vultures essentially just carry on wind drafts to get flight. So they just basically have a very low amount of energy that they input in order to hunt, quote unquote hunt, because they don't really hunt. They just are scavengers. There's another bird, the Pelagornis, which lived a little bit earlier than the Argentavis, but it was a physically smaller bird, body weight wise. They were predicted to be around 80-ish pounds. But they also had a wingspan of around 24 feet. So big, long birds. They are probably most likely similar to an albatross of today.
Oh.
Except their bills had thorny bits on it that functioned just like teeth. They weren't true teeth, but they were spiked bills, essentially. It's also assumed that the only way that they were able to take flight was from hopping off cliffs and catching the rise.
Just falling.
Basically, yes. But with style.
Yeah. Nice.
And that's actually kind of how albatrosses fly now and conserve energy as well. They're able to travel very, very far because the wind speed above water, above the ocean quite a ways, and right above it are different. It's faster up high, and it's much slower wind speeds down next to the water level. So albatrosses essentially do this continual roller coastering of swooping down, and then once they get into the slower air, essentially, they're able to maneuver quicker, and then they are able to propel themselves because they've caught enough speed going down to get back up to the upper, faster air so they can travel farther distance and then swoop back down again and catch that rise. So they do this continual S-shaped roller coaster, and on the downswing, they're able to pick up fish that are at the surface, and of course, that is their main source of meat and food, fuel, essentially. Both albatrosses doing this method of flight, and also Argentavis and big condors of today, catching air drifts and getting essentially pushed up, are both very low-energy ways of travel. Allows them to cover very, very far distances, which is awesome, without expending a lot of effort. Which means, especially, again, with our friend Argentavis, and also vultures.
He's
and condors,
not my friend. He my knows friend, what he did.
My friend, Argentavis, being able to physically travel far distances to clean up carcasses without putting in a ton of effort. And that's the important bit.
Hey everybody, really quick, it's just Sam here with a real quick mid-show break. We just wanted to shout out our two new patrons that we've gotten over the last few weeks. We would like to thank Teresa A. Lease, and we would like to thank Lethal Cheese Whiz. If you'd like to learn how you can support the show, you can head over to patreon.com/notalonepodcast to learn more. We are about a month out from me heading over to Washington. If we can get up to 150 patrons before that, Jason and I are going to go ghost hunting. And that will be a video that we'll post on our YouTube and make available for everybody from there. We are 44 patrons away from that. So if you're thinking you could help, we'd really appreciate it. If not, another great way that you can help the show is to leave us a podcast review. We got two of those this week as well, or these last 2 weeks, that we'd like to thank. One of them is Kelly Harvey, and one of them is Muddy Chicken. And we'll go ahead and read Muddy Chicken's. They say, "I love to listen to these two. I enjoy listening because they provide good researched information and don't take themselves too seriously," which of course is our entire goal with everything that we're doing. So we appreciate those kind words. We'd love it if you could help by donating. We'd love it if you could help by writing a review. But if you can't do either one of those, we'd just love it if you'll keep listening and maybe tell a friend. Guys, thanks so much. And here we go back to the show.
Tell me more about the Thunderbird.
Yes.
Thunderbird. Right.
Thanks for throwing it back, Jace. Thanks for bringing it back home. Now, what if... Huh? You're doing great. Now, what if...
So big birds existed.
They existed.
Very, very large birds, the size of men, have existed.
Could they carry off whales or elephants?
No, probably not. Because the issue, again, is, like I had said with Mothman, or I guess the checking in on Mothman episode, the only way that the Argentavis could physically probably take flight is if it got a running start. Nice thing is that it had strong legs to be able to potentially do this, but at a downslope as well. Modern condors and vultures of large sizes get a running start to take off. So does the albatross currently.
All right.
So our largest birds today essentially do a runway sprint order to gain flight.
And they look fabulous when they do.
Right. But you would have to have, at the size of an Argentavis, again, like a 5 or 6 foot tall bird, with the wingspan of potentially 21 feet, you would have to get a running start and also have a little bit of help from a hill or a cliffside before you're able to actually gain flight.
All right.
And that's because primarily of mass.
So they wouldn't have been able to grab an elephant and then go back up.
Exactly.
But they could swoop down on an elephant and knock him out.
You could swoop, you for
swoop
sure.
Good.
But again, vultures don't hunt. They don't put in effort to hunt. Their effort, for the most part, is essentially taking flight. Once they've taken flight, they are extremely low energy animals.
All right. All right. I like it. But what if everything Jason said isn't the only truth of a situation? What if there was truly a series of, or a species of, gigantic birds that roamed the sky shortly before and maybe even after the European colonization? Now, we could definitely look at reports of flying big old birds from around the world. As we mentioned, there are stories of them everywhere. But we will, for this episode, keep our eyes focused on the prize, North America, as it were. Now, the most famous of the real-life Thunderbird sightings comes from April 26th, 1890, from the town of Tombstone, Arizona.
Is that where the movie takes place?
What movie?
Tombstone.
Sure. Probably, because Tombstone, Arizona is very famous because of the shootout at the OK Corral.
That makes sense.
Doc Holliday and Wyatt Earp.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's the movie.
I've never seen this movie.
So with Val Kilmer in it.
Okay.
That's all I know.
Is it a good movie?
I heard it was great.
Okay.
I haven't seen it. Maybe we should do that.
Nope.
Okay.
I'm not interested in that movie.
In a Western? Shootout?
Pow. I haven't given Westerns maybe as much of a chance as I should have. I'll do that later when I make it through all the weird Japanese movies I'd like to watch
first. The Good
and
Bad, the Ugly? Like the spaghetti Western that started all other spaghetti Westerns?
No, I did buy Once Upon a Time in the West, which is supposed to be very, very good.
Isn't that the sequel?
I don't
know.
I don't
remember. Okay.
So, no.
Anyway, we're getting off track.
We are, as always.
Back to Tombstone.
Tombstone had two newspapers. One of them was the Tombstone Epitaph. It ran a story about two cowboys shooting a giant anomaly out of the sky. Now, the article claims that the cowboys took out a creature that had smooth skin, with featherless wings like a bat, and a face like an alligator. Interesting. There's not much more to that story, because A, like I said, it was the home, or not the home, but the site of the shootout at the OK Corral. That had happened 9 years previous, and they were feeling a little bit of a squeeze, touristy-wise. People loved it, and then they didn't. And also, they had two papers, but only one paper reported on it, and then it never reported on it again.
Sketchy.
But if we take...
Because usually, if a story like this happens, then it catches fire.
Yes.
And it's read everywhere.
And it gets over-reported.
Right. Absolutely.
Never under-reported.
Uh-uh.
Now,
but
what's
this
really
kind of had.
What's really...
Only one paper?
Yeah, only one paper, only Weird. One article. And again, what's really interesting to me about this is... Leathery or featherless wings like a bat and a face like an alligator. That's a...
That right there sounds like dinosaur.
That's a pterosaur.
That is a...
That is a pterodactyl bird boy in the sky. And living pterodactyls are their own things. We've actually mentioned them before. We talked about the... Oh my gosh, I can't even remember what it was now. But we had our whole... It was right around the episode 100,
Where was
I think.
It roping?
Ropin, we talked about, but
from New Guinea.
From New Guinea.
Yep.
But I thought we talked about that because we were talking about. There was another one that was specifically a.
Do you remember the region? I might be able to remember from that.
No, I can't.
But anyway, so we've talked about other potential pterosaurs flying around.
Let me find it real quick.
And we all know how I feel about these.
How do you feel about them, Jason?
They're not real.
Why, Jason?
Because a real carcass has never been shown. And if they shot it down, why isn't there a carcass?
Yeah, that's fair.
And we haven't seen any fossil record of these animals since the KT mass extinction.
That's fair.
And if it doesn't show up as a record in the fossils, in the ground... then it probably never existed past that point because pterosaurs were prolific in that era and then they just ceased to exist.
Mm-hmm. The Van Meter visitor is what it was. Does that ring
yes,
a bell now? Yes,
it does.
That was a living pterosaur or whatever
thing
that flew into a mine and died down there.
Right.
So there's that. Thank you for buying me a minute.
Of course.
And giving us valid information. Anyway, the most interesting thing about this story is that it claimed the received text of the article claims that there's a photo.
Yes.
The photo is missing.
It's lost to time.
There have been multiple attempts to recreate the photo that are all laughably fake.
Oh, yeah.
And they 100%. All show...
A pterosaur.
Yeah. They all show pterodactyls. So now, like I said, this one probably not legit. That's not to say that there are no legit Thunderbird sightings. The best attested Thunderbird sighting of the modern age comes to us from 1977. This is known as the Lawndale Incident, and it is a seminal tale in the surviving Thunderbird mythos. The story goes that on July 25th, 1977, a 10-year-old boy named Marlon Lowe was playing outside his home in Lawndale, Illinois, when two gigantic birds flew overhead. One swooped down, grabbed the boy, and started carrying him away. At the time, Marlon weighed 56 pounds. The bird made it 35 feet with Marlon before he was dropped out of the air, and theoretically was only dropped because he was startled by Marlon's mother's screaming, who had heard something in the garden and went out to see an image that I'm sure would haunt her for the rest of her very sad life. It probably wasn't too sad after this. I think they just got made fun of a lot. In fact, I know they just got made fun of a lot because they called the cops, and the cops made fun of them, which is sad. They claimed that the wingspan of the bird was about 10 feet, 8 to 10, maybe a little bit more. There were 7 witnesses, including Marlon and his mother, And the official statement from the police department was, quote, "The story is not being discounted because of the number of credible witnesses," unquote. But of course, they never released a report saying, yes, there was a giant bird. Right. It was even said that Marlin's hair changed from ginger to gray for a time, which is something I don't know that that actually happens.
It doesn't.
That's the stereo.
From, like, being scared.
Yeah, yeah.
No.
Isn't that what happened in Danny Phantom?
Yes, but that was an anime TV show.
Yeah,
and
it was
like,
great.
Infused with, like,
ghost powers.
Ghosts. He got fused with ghost essence.
Ghosts.
Which
anyway,
Danny Phantom was so cool.
It was such a good show.
I'm so sad of how short of a running it had. Mm-hmm.
I know. My RuneScape name was Danny Phantom because I couldn't
spell Phantom.
No. I could spell it, but it didn't have enough room.
Oh.
And back in those days, for whatever reason, I was very big into making sure that everything was like spelled exactly correct. Now, mm-hmm. This is interesting because I had to spell it incorrectly.
Why didn't you go with Dan?
Instead of doing Phantom. Dan Phantom, or probably even better, Danny Phantom but with an F, I did Danny Phantom.
Isn't...
I would log on to RuneScape.
Isn't his actual name Phantom with an F?
No, it's PH.
His character, like his actual, like...
No, it better not be.
His like...
If it is, I'm going to die.
Name, you know, like, hold on.
And you look that up. Yep. I would log on to RuneScape late at night, and I would go to... I can't even remember the major towns, but I'd go to the major towns, and I'd type out poetry. I would just stand there in the town square. Because, you know, on RuneScape, whatever you typed, it, like, appeared above your head or appeared in the chat. And I would just type out poetry for the people walking by.
His Clark Kent name is Fenton.
Fenton. That's right. Yep.
Yeah. Yep. That's why I was like, wait a second.
It is very close.
It's, huh, who would have thought?
Anyway.
Show and whatnot.
Danny Phantom aside.
Let's get that out of my browser.
The witnesses. The witnesses, of course, through your typical, just how it always works, they were separated. They told the exact same story. They were followed up with 2 years later by a separate researcher, all of whom...
Do we have any reports of saying, like, his clothes were ripped, he has scratch marks on his shoulders,
anything
like that?
I didn't find any medical report on it at all.
That by itself...
I know. Very suspicious.
Is incredibly suspicious.
I understand.
Words are tough.
According to Marlin's mother, Ruth, quote, "I'll always remember how that huge thing was bending its white ringed neck. It seemed to be trying to peck at Marlin as it was flying away," unquote.
White ringed neck. What do we know that has a white ringed
neck? She claimed it was the size of an ostrich.
Oh.
And looked like a condor.
There we go.
You want to? Oh, wait. Well, let me just say this. The birds were described as being coal black with white rings on their necks and long curled beaks by all seven of the witnesses. And go ahead, Jason.
Okay, so I'm not sure if you remember this or not, but there was a video circulating
just
around.
Just assume I don't.
About 8 years ago of a golden eagle picking up a toddler.
No.
Not ringing a bell? Anyway, so yeah, there's a video of a golden... I might have first seen it from, I don't know, some sketchy Animal Planet cryptid thing, probably.
As you do.
Yeah, typically. There was a...
For being committed to learning, Animal Planet is some... It's ridiculous. As is, of course, now the History Channel and the Discovery Channel. Because Animal Planet is all about cryptids, the History Channel is all about aliens, and the Discovery Channel is all about ghosts. Yeah. So, like, why? I love it, though.
I mean, yes, but still. Anyway, there's a video that circulated of a golden eagle that essentially swooped down and picked up the toddler in a park and lifted it, I don't know, roughly 4 to 5 feet maybe before dropping him.
Dang.
Now, golden eagles are a species of bird that have been, that we have trained historically for hunting quite frequently. And they're a great bird for that. But they don't have the physical capability of picking up a toddler. In that video, that bird and everything about it was CGI and actors. So...
What?
Yes, the people that actually shot the video came out and said that this was for a school project.
I guess 8 years ago, people didn't really know what CGI could do.
Don't get me wrong. It's real good.
Is it?
But it didn't hold up against skepticism of what golden eagles actually look like in the modeling and hunting behaviors. Golden eagles don't particularly swoop down like this. And again, they don't have the actual thrust capability of picking up a toddler.
Bird nerds come to the rescue again.
Pretty much.
Child student project.
And there hasn't actually been like a true verified record of any bird picking up any human or even small animals in general. I would assume maybe a very small dog or cat would probably get taken away, but nothing of, you know, being close to 20 to 30 pounds, not likely.
What about a 12-pound miniature dachshund named Baron?
Baron might want to look out.
Oh, no.
That being said, we don't have big animals like this flying around. Mainly because, like, we don't have, for the most part, like, an environment that supports it. We don't have, besides for deer, like, mountain lions and the occasional bear, I'm assuming, we don't have big sources of meat for a large predatory bird.
Okay.
We just don't. That being said, a big eagle might be able to scoop up Baron, but probably wouldn't be able to take him too far. Because, again, the problem is that once you get to a certain size with flight, your mass and everything else starts becoming way more important. So picking up a fish is one thing. Picking up a dog is a completely different scenario.
It's so much cuter, too.
Yeah.
How could you do that?
Plus, they're not really like, you know, fish, being that they swim through water, pretty streamlined.
Yeah.
As far as airflow is concerned.
Yeah. Baron's all lumpy and weird.
Yeah, exactly.
He's got weird legs.
So Baron, thankfully, because of selective breeding,
might survive.
Is not the ideal catch for a bird.
Well, that's a plus.
So we come into this idea that we've got a very large bird.
Okay.
10-foot wingspan.
Yep.
That's a big bird.
I'm a big old bird.
There is a bird currently living that has that wingspan.
Is there?
Nine. Close enough.
And what is it?
The California condor.
Oh, no.
I know, right? It's great. And it's also a condor, which lines up with the sighting.
Yep.
That being said, again, I don't think he probably got picked up. Especially because we have no physical evidence. And typically, something that's going to come and pick you up has big, sharp claws. Condors also don't particularly do that. They don't have claws meant for grasping.
But it does fit the condor. And the white
from
ring
the
around the neck is
classic,
a telltale condor
classic
sign.
Vulture look.
Okay.
Continue.
All right. So Jason thinks that it was a condor, but it wasn't even there to begin with.
Correct.
That's fine. Now, these events would prove to be the first in a series of sightings in Illinois in 1977, all within the span of like a week.
Well, shoot.
There was one individual.
There might have been one condor.
There was one individual known as Texas John Huffer.
Wow.
Yeah. Yep, that's the name.
Hey, that guy over there, Texas John.
He was fishing with his son when he saw a huge bird in the trees. He grabbed his video recorder. What the frick? Video camera.
Okay, so we have video ever.
We do have video. Yeah, and I actually posted it in the notes. That link right there.
You sent it in a link?
Yeah.
Again, I never actually got this far.
That's fine. Jason's going to play it really quick. You too, sit down and play it. Jason, turn off your sound.
That's what I was going for.
And then it's actually, I'll link to this in the show notes. So what we have is up other way.
Yep. It didn't load.
What we have is a news report.
It's an ad.
Oh,
I'm seeing an ad.
What we have is a news report from 1977. It's your evening news. The thing cuts to an interview with Texas John. Texas John, it then shows his video footage. And it's, of course, hard to tell one way or the other. Jason is reviewing it now, and we'll come back to us.
Man telling me what it is.
We'll come back to us with a verdict here in just a moment. But before he does, it is worth noting The Texas John, who looks exactly like you think he would look like.
He looks like Elvis, sort of.
He and his son were boating, and they saw these two birds in the trees. They took the video. He then goes with his son to the bird's nest, and they find baseball-sized droppings. The nest itself is just huge. They estimated the bird at being about 12 feet wingspan. They do not have it mentioned, nor is there evidenced on the video itself the characteristic white ring around the neck. At this point, I'm going to wait just a minute here.
It doesn't let me.
Let Jason finish up.
Go back. I want to go see tap on it.
I can tap on.
Go look at the video for yourself. We have it linked in the show notes.
There's no way this is a 12-foot wingspan on a bird.
That's Jason's professional opinion.
No, like it's just from the top of the tree.
Wait, play it. Because there's one point where it looks. I agree with you. The first shot, I agree. But then, and it's probably just perspective.
Oh yeah.
But there's this one point where it looks freaking huge. It's not there either. That kind of looks just like a hawk.
Yeah, it looks like a big hawk or eagle.
Yeah, but then I think it's right after this.
The amount of flapping it's doing,
yeah,
looks not... like a lot more powered flight than what.
There we go. That looks like a condor.
I mean, it's a big bird, but
the frame of reference, who knows the perspective? But it looks pretty freaking big.
I mean, it's a big bird. They're big birds.
They're freaking large.
That's a lot of effort, though, getting up. I would have to say...
He's a big dude. It's
probably a vulture.
All right.
Or an eagle. And I say that because the lake that I frequented as a kid, there is actually this very, very secluded and very cool pond that was home to a lot of frogs, which was super fun. But it was also home to a lot of vultures sunbathing. And they looked gigantic.
Yeah.
They looked the size of me as a kid, and they're just sitting there with their arms slightly spread, their wings slightly spread, and just sunbathing in the afternoon heat. Absolutely gorgeous animals. Huge birds. But they just looked like statues standing on the top of these rocks. Out in the distance, and they do look just phenomenally huge.
Very large.
These giant black birds.
Very large birds, but normal birds nonetheless.
Yeah. Vultures all the same.
Now, like I mentioned, Texas John was the second in a number of sightings, basically a rash of sightings that took place in about the course of a week. Almost everybody agreed coal black birds, 8 to 12 feet was the highest estimate in wingspan. And a good amount of them did see the white neck as well. Now, of course, you do have the problem that, like, it. What I read is that it is indicative of a California condor, but this was in Illinois. So,
yeah. And I'm going to talk about them a little bit more later on, probably after we get this past this next part.
Yep. And this is the last part I have, so then you can talk all you want.
Perfect.
Now, to round it out, there have been Thunderbird sightings that continue on to the modern day, with a notable few of them coming from the biggest, northest state of them all, Alaska. Now, the first of these sightings took place all the way back in 2002. There were reports out of the villages of Togiak and Manukotok that a bird had been sighted with a wingspan of around 14 feet and was compared by many to a small airplane. One witness, Moses Kupchaik, believed it was a plane. He said it was coming right towards him, and it wasn't until it banked left extremely suddenly that he realized it was a bird at all. One bird specialist stated, quote, "I'm not aware of anything with a 14-foot wingspan that's been alive for the last 100,000 years, unquote. Residents of the area were told to keep their children indoors. Later, another report came from a pilot who had initially been skeptical of the huge bird sightings until he saw in the air, in his plane, the giant bird and confirmed its size from about 1,000 feet away.
That's not very close.
It's not, but he's also a pilot, so he has to be very good at judging distance and perspective, is my thinking here.
I hope so.
There was another rash of sightings, and then nothing for a very long time, until very recently, in 2018, when some very remarkable reports started coming out of Juno. According to the Juno Empire, a bird with a wingspan, the length of a highway road, or I suppose the width of a highway road, was sighted in the Mendenhall Valley in Juno. The first witness was a woman named Tabitha Bauer, who stated, quote, "I was just driving by the movie theater in the valley, and there was a huge black bird flying above the road. The wingspan had to be at least 20 feet. It was almost as wide as the road. I have lived here all my life and have never seen anything like it. It freaked me out. It was not a raven or an eagle. This isn't a joke. This thing was huge. Almost the size of a small airplane." Now, her sighting had taken place at 4 p.m. on January 16th, 2018. The bird was described as having a short tail and flew within 50 feet of her car. She said the body of the thing could have been as tall as 8 feet and, as we mentioned, with a 20-foot wingspan. Interestingly enough, her account, which was first posted to a Juno community group, solicited a number of affirmatory responses from members of the group, one of which was a woman named Diane, who said she saw something huge disrupting a tree that it was perching in late at night that could have been about the same size. Diane's account is very vague all around. It's very late at night. You have something huge in a tree. She goes out. She shines a light. And basically, this thing just cannot balance. It cannot sit in the tree because it is so large. And then it flies away. And she can see that it's like 20 foot wide, 8 foot tall. Abouts.
Okay.
Because of this, she has not been camping to this day. So far as I know, those 2018 accounts in Alaska are the latest of the Thunderbird sightings in the North America lands.
As a cryptid.
As a cryptid. But if you know differently, let me know. Now that's all I've got for Thunderbirds. Jason, I know you want to talk a little bit more about your state bird.
It's not my state bird. The California state bird is a quail.
That's which a is dumb stupid. Bird. That sucks.
Yes, it
Let's talk
does.
About what ought to be your state bird.
Okay, sure. Absolutely. Love to. So what I'd like to talk about is a California condor. They have kind of been outrunning extinction for a while.
One time Johnny Cash crashed into a flock of them.
What?
Yeah.
Oh, dear. That explains. Yeah. So the California condor is a very large vulture. Essentially, being that it's a condor, with a wingspan roughly around 9 feet long. So close to a lot of these sightings recently.
Some of them.
Now, besides for our 20-foot
not the 20-footer.
But dimension-wise, that doesn't add up because we've never had a bird that physically tall. Good news is short tail is spot on for big birds.
Big bird.
Because I think I've talked about this a few times, but in my dragon episode, and also later on with big things that fly, you have to sacrifice other things in order to become airborne. The bigger the bird, generally the smaller the tail is, because tail creates drag. Small birds are able to have larger tails for helping maneuvering and stuff like that, because they are more acrobatic in the air, and dimension-wise and mass, they can do that. They don't have to sacrifice for purely size. Condors and other big birds generally do.
Big
if anything,
bird.
They look like a mostly wing in the air. They have very, very short tails because, again, drag is their enemy, especially when you're this large to begin with. Now, wing to body ratio size doesn't quite add up. Maybe if that is, if we're talking like an 8-foot bird, maybe if that is from tip to tail, feather tip, like maybe that makes a little bit more sense, possibly, for a 12 or 20 foot wingspan. But the issue comes in with going back to our friend the California condor, food. Like I've been saying, condors are scavenging animals. We talked about the Argentavis, which had megafauna to feed off of. The California condor and its relatives that have already gone extinct had the same thing up here in North America. Like I was saying before, we had Smilodons, we had
giant ground sloths, mammoths, big animals to feast on. Because of that, you get big as well. The California condor was probably one of the smaller of the genuses that were flying around at this time. But, again, a very, very large bird compared to what we have now. Condors have been, their bones, their fossils, have been found as far from up western New York and as far southeast as in Florida. And so far, we actually discovered a humerus, which is basically this bone of the wing.
He's pointing
to,
for anybody who may never see this video, because who knows?
The upper arm.
From the shoulder to the elbow.
Correct. That bone. The humerus, which was mistaken originally to be an elk bone, all the way in Oregon.
Well.
Pretty cool.
Now, all right, then.
The California condor slowly diminished and was going extinct for quite a long time, up until the 1980s, when a large conservation effort was made and wrangled up pretty much the remaining 24-ish, I want to say, is low 20s of the population.
Wow.
And captive bred them, effectively making them extinct in the wild. But to those efforts, we now have hundreds, which is great. And we are able to re-release them into California and also into the Grand Canyon area, which is fantastic as well, because they have, for the most part, large deer, antelope, those kind of animals to feast on still, to where it makes sense for them to be placed there. Originally six were there. Now I believe a couple dozen are seen, which is fantastic. In California, the predominant idea of how, while all the other species of large condors died out, teratorns died out after the last mini ice age, about 10,000 years ago, is the fact that, yes, the ground-based megafauna were gone, but that didn't stop big water creatures.
Like Nessie.
No. Like dolphins and whales. Now, going back to our story earlier of a giant bird, a thunderbird, coming down and eating a whale or picking up a whale and dispersing it into the mountains, California condors were able to actually eat washed up carcasses of whales, fish, and other porpoises to sustain themselves and to keep their population alive while all the other megafauna died out. We are able to figure this out mainly because we were able to look at very specific proteins in the fossils of these birds that mimicked and matched the same proteins that we would find in today's waterfowl, which is pretty cool.
That is cool. That's so some cool science.
They were able to survive. It makes sense that thunderbirds are common on the western coast because, again, we have these large animals washing up onto the shoreline and thus being able to be a real food source for a scavenging bird of this size while all the other ones have died out. So I think it was okay. A California condor.
Okay.
They're rare enough that seeing one in, say, Illinois is where we're at, would be incredibly rare and not a sight that anyone would really see. Because at this point in time, again, we had maybe a couple dozen, and they were localized in California.
And it would, in reality, probably be the biggest bird someone ever saw.
Period.
Period.
Yeah, at least in North America, for sure. I think it's currently the biggest bird. Might not be the biggest wingspan, that's the albatross. But I believe, purely pound per pound, I think it is currently the biggest bird. But yeah, these magnificent animals essentially survived the extinction of its food source. There's also, weirdly enough, another kind of like an antelope. It's the trihorned deer, I think, or something like that, the tripoint deer, that is still around. But it doesn't make a lot of sense, mainly because it can run. It's also North American. It can run like 60 miles an hour. We don't have any predators that get anywhere close to that. So
it wins.
But in the last ice age era, we had a last mini ice age. So again, like 10,000-ish years ago, we did have essentially our version of a North American cheetah, which would explain the arms race of becoming faster. And thus, after that animal collapsed and went extinct. You now have this remaining creature that can still outrun it, but now there isn't anything that it needs to outrun at that speed, but it's still around, which is cool.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's essentially a very big bird that probably should have already gone extinct.
And we saved it.
And we've been able to save it.
We brought it back from the brink.
This really amazing animal. Yeah, exactly. It is.
Are we the ones who took it? Are we the ones who took it to the brink in the first place?
Because
if so, that's just common courtesy, I think.
Lead poisoning doesn't help. Because of shot that's left in carcasses. Lead shot. Yeah.
Yeah.
So those pellets get into their system and will kill them. Just like with eagles, there's been a lot of poisoning and detriment to their populations from us. We were definitely halfway nailing in that last nail into the coffin for them, and then we were able to pull it back open.
Thank goodness.
Yeah.
Low number.
They are incredibly beautiful creatures, so I'm glad that they are still around, and I think they are a success story of what we can do for the populations of animals in our world.
There you go. Another success story.
Yeah.
We finished it. We did it.
I tend to think that a lot of these sightings are California condors.
Yeah.
Their population size makes sense.
Okay.
These are incredibly rare birds. So seeing one would be
awe-inspiring.
Extreme. Exactly. And then you blow it out of proportion a little bit. It makes sense. They are also always soaring onto these higher air patterns. It makes sense. And they can cover a ton of ground. It is not uncommon for a California condor to have, I believe, like 150 square mile hunting ground.
Wow.
That they can travel. So you can theoretically understand how it can potentially traverse the entire North America continent fairly easily.
Wow.
In its lifespan, at least. So I would have to post it up as saying that the California condor is probably the animal everyone has been seeing. I would not be surprised if that bone in Oregon that was estimated to be to a 12-foot wingspan bird was actually a California condor. The only catch is that I didn't look quite into the genetics of it to see if it was or not. But bird skeletons are really hard to find because of their nature of being hollow bones. They don't really hold up too well. Going back to, again, like the La Brea tar pit, which is the best source of fossils that we have from the last mini ice age. Because once it gets trapped in tar,
ain't getting out.
Yeah, well, it's not getting out, but it's a really good way to preserve the skeletons as well. That's why we have so many down in LA from there. Because basically one big animal, one mammoth, gets trapped in the tar pit, starts crying out. Its family members, its grouping or whatever, tries to help, gets stuck as well. Then you have the predators coming in. So you have, from the sounds of the distress, you have, again, big saber-toothed cats. You have giant wild dogs, essentially, at this point in time as well. Dire wolf-esque things that can chomp through just pure bone. And then you also have the scavengers, like our good friends, the condors, that swoop in and also try to take advantage of these scenarios. Little do they know that it is just one giant trap and a perfect snapshot for us to go back and dig through.
There you go.
So I think our Thunderbirds are condors.
But they didn't pick up a kid and that lady was lying, and so were the other six people.
Probably.
All right. Well, that's about it for Thunderbirds, then.
People lie. Physics don't.
Sure. I don't have any dispute with that statement.
But yeah, I had fun finding out more about big birds.
Yeah, you learned a lot about big birds. I felt like you knew most of that already. Yeah, you just know a lot about birds. I had fun reading ancient folktales and legends.
Big flying things are great.
I didn't have fun looking at pictures of cowboys holding pterodons.
Yeah, all of those was...
They're very bad. We'll post them in the show notes.
And they're also pretty commonplace of the American Southwest having some sort of pterodon flying around. And
yeah, it's very strange.
Getting shot down.
Maybe we'll talk more about that one day.
Sure.
We kind of talked about it again with the Van Meter visitor. We talked about that and then the rope in that. But who knows? Maybe we'll just do a pterodon special.
I think just for anyone, the easiest way when you're looking at any kind of carcass or description of like a pterodon of some sort is to kind of go back to that time and see like how we understand these creatures at that point. Same thing that I did like with Nessie is the telltale like swan neck shape was not actually physically possible for these animals to do. Same thing with like just mid-century fossils in general and our understanding of what these creatures looked like from the 20s to the even like the 70s, really. A lot of pop culture and a lot of how we saw them were amalgamations of different pterodons all rolled up into one specimen, which now we know that it wasn't the case. The bigger, again, going back to that tail feather, the bigger you are, the smaller your tail has to be. You have to make sacrifices in order to be able to take flight. So that's the easiest way of saying, hey, does this description make sense? Oh, it sounds like a pterodon from that time period and not a logical pterodon that we know of today. It's probably incorrect to some degree.
Question everything.
Exactly.
I love it.
Do your homework.
All right. Well, Jason, you got anything else?
My homework. Rarely do it.
You don't. You're not in school, even though
I mean, this is
trying
my homework.
To. Yeah. Well,
this is clearly my homework.
This isn't building you a better future. You should probably go back to school.
I don't know. I feel like I can write a great fantasy novel by this point in time.
There you go. I
love it. That might do it.
Well, you know where to find us: Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. Who did it last week?
I did.
All right. I'm going to do it this
week.
Because
it was a Jason special.
That makes sense. I'm going to do it this week. Remember, whether you are flying high above the sky and you look down to see a delectable-looking 10-year-old waiting to be plucked and taken back to your nest, or you are a 45-pound 10-year-old boy with...
little kid.
The wrath of God itself swooping down upon you to carry you away. You are not alone.